You are listening to Colorado Outdoors, the podcast for Colorado Parks and Wildlife.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Colorado Outdoors podcast presented by Colorado Parks and Wildlife. We have another unique episode for everybody today. We are live from the Partners in the Outdoors Conference here in 2024 at the Beaver Run Resort in Breckenridge, Colorado. Big conference. We've got 400 attendees. It sold out early. Really excited about our guests today. We have Shalana Gray with CPW, who's in charge of putting together this conference. We've also got Bianca Martinez, who's part of Hunters of Color, and a few other organizations that we'll dive into, as well as Topher Downham with City of Boulder Open Space and Mountain Parks, who's been huge in working with our state parks and a lot of different organizations, getting adaptive programs for people with disabilities to get them into the outdoors. So we're really excited to be joined by a lot of our partners for this Partners podcast here live from Breckenridge. And I'm going to be joined by Kara Van Hoos, who's hosting another show with me. Kara, it's great for you to be back. Joining me on this PIO team and doing another podcast.
Yes, glad to be back and attending my first Partners in the Outdoors conference. And while you are listening to our conversations with our guests, you'll be treated to the lovely ambience of a Partners conference with all of the conversations and elevators that we recorded with.
You know, we've already had a couple of great keynote speakers. I know we're looking forward to a few more as we go on throughout the conference, but really just looking forward to bringing an inside glimpse for anyone who couldn't be here into some of our partners who are here, and just really look forward to bringing you that content the rest of the day.
Yes.
So thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll get right into chatting with some of our guests.
Yes, let's do it.
All right. Fittingly, we are going to be joined by Shalana Gray, who's organized this great conference on behalf of CPW. I know it's a whole year worth of work that goes into this, and then a really crazy few days. So thanks for just taking a couple of minutes to join us, Shalana.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
How do you even go about beginning to plan something like this? Because it's just a white piece of paper, right? And that's really intimidating. So do you start with a theme? Do you start kind of with who you want to come? What's step one?
Yeah. And I remember so vividly looking in my Google Drive in the file in that folder, and it was blank. And I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know where to start. But the beginning is choosing a date and a venue, just something really simple like that, getting a venue and a date locked in. Our next steps was we did 6 listening sessions with partners around the state. 4 were virtual, 2 in person, and the listening sessions were open to everybody to give feedback on the conference, what they've liked in the past, what they want to see in the future, how do we bridge that gap. And so that was the most amazing way to start a new job, was to be able to meet so many partners and hear from them and what they're looking for. One of their pieces of feedback was the conference planning committee. So in the past, the committee was kind of hand-selected, and people really wanted to see kind of a more equitable process. So we did an open application process for the planning committee. I think we got over 60 applications, and amazing applications. Like, it was really hard to choose who we would select. But the next step was picking the planning committee, and we worked with them to develop that theme. And they've just, again, been amazing to work with, and couldn't have done this without them.
That must have been really encouraging for you coming into a new role to hear that people are still interested in coming in this conference. Yeah. They want to be a part of the planning committee. They want to talk with other people about challenges and issues that are going on in the outdoors.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. People have been really excited for this conference. We sold out extremely quickly this year, and our wait list has over 100 people on it. So the interest is there. I get a lot of emails like, excited for future conferences if they couldn't make this one. And everything I've heard, people are just really stoked.
So far at the conference, we've heard the emphasis on the theme. Mm-hmm. First of all, can you let our listeners on the show know what that theme is and how it resonates and what it means to you?
Yeah. So the theme this year that the committee came up with is we are better together, creating a connected conservation community. It's kind of a mouthful. But really, this Partners in the Outdoors conference is special because it's truly everybody who works in some facet of the outdoors. So We have recreation organizations, conservation, wildlife, outdoor industry and gear, education, nonprofits, literally everybody. And I think some of the challenges we face are people might just have different approaches. But when it comes down to it, we all care about the outdoors. So in order to protect the outdoors and meet our goals, we really truly do need to collaborate and work together. And everybody here has a different role in that. And I've kind of been comparing it to an ecosystem. In an ecosystem, every animal and plant has its niche, and they're all really valuable to that ecosystem. And so I see us as being that. And like, we need everybody in order to thrive.
Right. We're all on the same team, right? Mm-hmm. We all have the same goal, love the outdoors, want it to be around for generations to come. Mm-hmm. How important is it then to listen to those different viewpoints that everyone has?
Extremely important, especially being a statewide kind of partnership, a statewide program. People in Colorado, you know, the Plains, the Front Range, Western Slope, everywhere come from really different backgrounds and have really different experiences. A lot of the reasons we chose our keynotes this year is to really emphasize that, how important it is to have those different perspectives and experiences shared and to truly hear from everybody.
We're in a little bit smaller venue than we were at 2 years ago. What was just kind of the overall goal and mission within CPW over the last couple of years of kind of taking a step back, thinking about what we want this conference to be, and do we take it from here and grow even more looking ahead to another year in the future?
Yeah, it's been a tough conversation, to be honest. We are in a smaller venue. We have about 400 attendees this year compared to 600 that were there in 2022. Part of the reason for downsizing a little bit was to ensure good quality. If you were at 2022, that ballroom was packed. It was tough to get around. There were a lot of people in there. So that felt like it might have sacrificed quality a little bit. So we wanted people to feel comfortable, just able to move around the space comfortably. We do plan to move to a larger venue in the future. After this year, the conference selling out, having this huge wait list, it's really clear that the interest is there and we want to invite more people. So we do plan to grow. We're going to have to just be really thoughtful in how we do that and make sure it's really a welcoming and comfortable space.
I've been impressed with the quality of the sessions that are offered here this year, and just, you know, you want to go to all of them, but it's just physically impossible. Which of the sessions are you looking forward to?
Oh, yeah. A lot of them have been amazing and just like fit right with the conference theme. I am personally looking forward to the accessibility showcase that's going to happen because I've kind of been a part of helping that get going. So we have organizations, I think maybe four different organizations coming to that to showcase different adaptive equipment. So like track chairs with Boulder Open Space and Mountain Parks. We've got the Lockwood Foundation with their trail riders. Cheyenne Mountain is bringing a terrain hopper. Ridgeway's bringing a beach wheelchair and maybe like a paddleboard. We've got Outdoor Buddies with adaptive hunting and angling equipment and a track chair. So it's going to be a really big showcase and really fun, I think.
How do you go about choosing the topics for the different sessions? Is this something that we at CPW came up with, or was this kind of an open call of, hey, if you have an idea, let us know?
Mm-hmm. So it was a planning committee. We have different subcommittees within that planning committee. So we have a committee specifically for reviewing session proposals. So what we were looking for in a session proposal was, does it fit with the conference theme? And then a lot of this conference and my program is based on the SCORP, I almost shouldn't even say the acronym.
Statewide Comprehensive Outdoor Recreation Program. There we go. We got it.
Statewide Comprehensive Outdoor Recreation Program. So there are four main pillars of the SCORP, four main priorities. So we looked for sessions that also aligned with those SCORP priorities, especially if they showed how interconnected those priorities are.
Okay. And now I want to throw a tough one at you. If we can do this, what does partnership mean to you?
Ooh, I've gotten this question before and I think about it a lot. So I don't want to be like cliche and repetitive, but like it truly is that we're better together. And nobody knows everything. And the issues we're facing in Colorado and everything we have to do, like no one person or no one organization can tackle that alone. So I just think it's really important to not only work with partners, but get to know each other as humans, which is another thing we're trying to emphasize at this conference is build those authentic relationships, get to know people, truly understand and listen to their experiences, and then do your work from there.
Well, thanks, Shalina. I really appreciate it. I think we all really value working in an agency that prioritizes the kind of conferences and the conversations that we're all having this week. And a lot of that obviously wouldn't be possible without all the coordination. So just want to give you a special thanks for putting this all together so that we could even be here today. So thanks for all the great work.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, we are joined now by Topher Downham with City of Boulder Open Space and Mountain Parks. Topher, just thanks a ton for joining us at the Partners Conference and taking a little bit of time here in the middle of all the sessions today to join us on the show.
You bet. Glad to help out.
Topher, can you just tell us a little bit about your role at the Partners Conference? I know you're presenting two sessions here on this opening day. Just a little bit about your role presenting at the Partners Conference.
Sure. So I'm really involved with the whole adaptive outdoor recreation. We at the City of Boulder have a bunch of adaptive equipment that we take people out on rides and hikes and like roll and stroll hikes. So we're pretty involved with CPW already, like helping with trainings and working with other parks and stuff, figuring out what equipment they could use. So this fits in perfect with this program, the whole motto of this event. We're doing a program on kind of the human experience of adaptive outdoor recreation and basically, kind of showing like a deeper level of like how it transforms the community and how it transforms people. We're also doing a demo with all the equipment and we're collaborating with like Outdoor Buddies and Cheyenne Mountain and Ridgeway, the Lockwood Foundation. We're all bringing our equipment in to kind of show people how they can get out. Because there's so many different ways to enter the outdoors with a disability now. It's pretty phenomenal.
And the theme of this year's conference is Better Together, Collaboration, Community. Why is it important to remember the adaptive community when we talk about outdoors?
Oh, that's a good question. Because we're better together and we're part of it. And, I've been kind of pondering this whole idea of value. Like people want value. And one of the groups that doesn't give value a lot is people with disabilities. So we're part of this community and we have value. And when we don't get to get outside, we kind of lose that and we lose that connection with nature and we lose that connection with community. So when we're interacting with others in the outdoors, not just with people with disabilities, but everybody, it creates a stronger community and more empathy and understanding. Kind of like just what the keynote speaker was saying earlier. It's better that way when we're all together and making changes.
Topher, can you just give us a little bit about your backstory and what got you inspired to kind of, get into work in this space?
So I actually broke my neck 28 years ago, diving into a swimming pool. It was my last semester at CU. I had actually planned on graduating with a marketing degree and then working for Knowles. I was a Knowles alumni, thought it'd be cool to get people into the outdoors. So broke my neck, realized that the best thing for me to do was get back into nature to heal. And I basically spent a lot of time in the trails. Like I was pissed off a lot in the grievance process. So I be like, I can't stay inside. I got to get out, even though I don't want to go out. And I'd go hike a trail and then get those endorphins going, hang out by like a stream, find that connection again, and realize that, hey, I got a different user group to work with now. Like I can share this with everybody else with disabilities. So I wrote a guidebook, got that guidebook going, started programs like Rolling Strolls, where I would take people out on hikes. And we'd like focus on something like fall colors or mammals or wildflowers.
So you talk about the healing power that nature has. How have you seen that in people who have taken your programs, who have taken advantage of the different opportunities that you offer?
That's a good question. It's pretty interesting. Like, a lot of people that come on our programs haven't been out before. They're just getting into it. And you see them at the beginning of the program and they're very kind of tentative. And you know, like the bike rides, it's a new piece of equipment and they're used to being in their wheelchair. And they're used to being like limited to like paved paths and like really solid crush refined paths, not a lot of slope. You put them in this and all of a sudden they're connecting with nature. They're like going through a stream and they're going up like a rock filled. And they, people have like these giant smiles on their face. And just like that enjoyment is healing in and of itself. Not to mention just being in nature and being like closer to the trees with like a Shinyin Roku, the forest bathing thing. That's pretty amazing. Like just being in nature is healing. And I found it with my stress and my like grievance process, it healed me and got me more accepting of where I was at and what I could do in this world to help it out.
You talk about that stress and the grievance process. To get somebody to, you know, get engaged with the outdoors, take advantage of an opportunity, maybe for the first time since they've had an injury, what's that feeling for you when you see them kind of experience that moment of realizing like, I can get out and do all these things that I love, maybe just in a slightly different way?
That makes my day. Like I gained so much from that. It's like, all right, I got somebody else out there and they're enjoying it. And I think like, just to kind of step back a little bit, I have credibility because I'm a quadriplegic that's doing exactly what they want to do. And they have a lot of trust. Like, okay, I'm not going to take them someplace where they can't go. So they are able to like kind of assimilate with the bikes and the experience a lot easier.
Are we better off today with adaptive opportunities than we were 10 years ago? And how does partnerships and collaborations like the ones we're talking about at this conference factor into that?
Oh my God, it's taking off so well. Just seeing all of CPW, like Ridgeway getting equipment. And so Jeffco got a couple of the adaptive bikes now. And Craig Hospital has a bunch. We started a kind of a collaboration where we're going to have a bike ride every month, like in some different location along the Front Range. And we're all bringing our bikes and we're all helping to do the fitting and take riders out and getting riders that have done it before to be mentors. And it's amazing. Like, I can't believe it. I'm like, I wish this would have happened 20 years ago. But I mean, change takes time. And I feel like we're almost at that apex now where it's just so accepted.
Yeah, Topher, I just want to thank you. You know, I've been had the pleasure in my life of working a little bit with Durango Adaptive Sports Program. Now seeing the work at Ridgeway State Park and the way they're able to bring in, you know, Telluride Adaptive Sports, it's just really special, you know, from wheelchair compatible paddle boards to beach mats that allow folks, wheelchairs to get right down on the water. The track chair program obviously is huge and expanding all across Colorado all the time. And, you know, for a lot of our folks who don't know how to get into this, just being able to work alongside you and learn from your experiences, it's just been so beneficial for so many of us at CPW. So just want to thank you for your work and your collaboration on a lot of this.
Thanks. And let's keep it up. Let's keep doing it. And as I learn more, I'll pass it on to you. And as you learn more, please pass it on to me.
Yeah, no question.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, we are now joined by Bianca Martinez, who is wearing a ton of hats at the Partners in the Outdoors Conference of 2024. Bianca, thank you so much for taking a little bit of time to join us.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for having me. I guess somebody snitched that I talk a lot, so sorry if I take up too much of your time.
Yeah, we had to get you on. I know you fill so many roles. We were just talking about, you know, what a busy person you are. Tell us a little bit about your involvement with the conference and all the different organizations you're representing.
Yeah, so I think first and foremost, I'll talk about my 9-to-5. I work for a 28-year-old conservation nonprofit called the Greater Arkansas River Nature Association, but we call it GARNA for short. And we originally started as a partner agency to the Arkansas Headwaters Recreation Area. We have a lot of eggs and a lot of baskets. I oversee equity and education. Another one of my coworkers oversees sort of our public land volunteer initiatives. We had a big waste diversion push. We have a mobile gear library for the county. So if it involves kids, public land agencies going outside, our name is probably somewhere in there. And then I'm also representing Hunters of Color. I am the Central Colorado Ambassador for the state of Colorado. And I'm very new to that role. I just started this year and I'm partnering with two other ambassadors sort of to kick up our initiative and kick up programming. I am on the board of the Collegiate Peaks chapter of Trout Unlimited. I also, you know, try to keep myself sane, do some extracurriculars. And then I think probably one of the most time intensive parts of my life is I'm a graduate student at Western Colorado University. As you can see, conservation is a theme. So I'm getting my master's in environmental management. And I really like working with people. So my specialty, my specialization, my concentration is on sustainable and resilient communities. How do I do it? I don't know.
That's all the time we have for you, Bianca. Thanks. We only got through all of your interests.
I'll see myself out.
Is this your first Partners Conference?
No, actually. And I did want to touch on this a little bit. I went to the Partners Conference that happened in 2021. And I say I come full circle because I actually met two of the three co-founders of Hunters of Color, Jimmy and Lydia, at the last Partners Conference. And I sort of became enamored with the organization and their mission. So now I've come full circle to where I'm an ambassador for them and I'm tabling for them. So it was really nice to see like how far a lot of the connections that I was able to make at the last Partners Conference have really carried me pretty far. And I've built really meaningful, long-lasting relationships with a lot of those people.
Wow. So this conference for you has a very special place in your life.
It really does. I have an amazing working relationship with CPW. I've met a lot of amazing people at this conference, both last year that it happened as well as this year. And it just really is one of my favorite places to be. And these are some of my favorite people to talk to.
Well, tell us a little bit about Hunters of Color, because this is a very important partner and very important space for people to know that exists and to kind of get the word out about.
Yeah, so I'll tell you sort of a little bit about my personal story and how I got involved and then why I think I'm so obsessed with the mission of the organization. I grew up in Chicago. It's not a very outdoorsy place. You know, like I was in a very, very urban area, concrete jungle. I always joke with people that I think I saw more fluorescent yellow streetlights than I did trees growing up as a kid. And for some reason, I was just always enamored with biology, always enamored with conservation. That's sort of where I ran with my career. And when I moved out of Chicago to work in outdoor education in southern Wisconsin with a lot of BIPOC students from Chicago, I sort of realized that these were skills that I wanted to develop, although I didn't really have the formal mentorship to do that. Over time, I developed these skills. The pandemic happened. I had a choice between moving to Philly and moving to Salida. Didn't want to be in an urban area during the middle of a pandemic. So I chose Salida, was only supposed to be there for 3 months or for 6 months. Here I am going on 4 years. And I think part of my love for Hunters of Color was, one, the fact that I didn't have a lot of outdoor skills growing up as a kid. And the other part of it is that I sort of developed them on my own. I'm what I consider an adult onset outdoors person. You know, like a lot of these skills I developed after even undergrad, when I was sort of finding my place in the world. And then as much as I realized I like learning these things, because I have a background in, you know, teaching and working with youth, I like learning as much as I like educating other people. So when I think when I went to the Partners Conference, I was at a point where unfortunately I was plateauing with a lot of my skills. You know, you can only teach yourself so much. You really need that formal mentorship and that community behind you. And when I found Hunters of Color, they had so much in their messaging that really resonated with me. Yes, getting people hunting is great, but I think one of the main objectives of this organization is to connect people with a lot of their ancestral lifeways that may have either been let go because of relocation, because of circumstance, because, you know, of a lot of things that BIPOC people have to go through in this country. And they also have a big proponent of food sovereignty and community. And I think that is the bigger picture instead of just hunting. It's really about finding your community and reconnecting with a lot of these things.
All right. So I know mentorship is such a huge part of what your organization does. I myself got to do my first mentored hunt with Colorado Parks and Wildlife staff last winter. And I think it's just a huge part of getting people involved in hunting and understanding what it means to harvest your own food and be able to put that on the table. Just what were your mentorship experiences like when you were getting into this? And then, you know, how do you kind of, you know, pay that forward down the road with mentorship opportunities and getting people involved yourself?
So I think because I'm an adult onset outdoors person, I've always sort of had, whether it's formal or informal, a sort of mentorship relationship with people around me. And I didn't realize what I wanted out of a mentor, I think, until I moved to Colorado. I've always had really amazing people who are willing to disseminate skills. But I will say, being somebody who is not only Black, but also Latina and also queer, there are a lot of nuances to engaging in the outdoors that I think people who don't have the same lived experiences as me don't understand. And I didn't realize that a lot of the mentorship that I was getting informally from other outdoors people, they weren't taking some of these things into account. Luckily, having grown up with a mother who was in law enforcement for 12 years, there was some familiarity with what it means to be safe as a person of color in the outdoors. However, when I moved to Colorado, especially once I started meeting people from Hunters of Color and that community, there were a lot of things that really resonated with me emotionally and culturally when it came to being an outdoors person. I had an amazing formal Western hunting mentorship with Hunters of Color in 2023 that took me out to the Washington area twice last year. The first portion of that happened earlier in the year. It was all education-based, all heavy mentorship. The second portion of that happened in October, and that was more of an actual hands-on hunting component. But one of the things that, you know, like, quite literally like brought me to tears is the fact that they were so culturally informed about what it means to be Black, Hispanic, Native, Asian in the outdoors. And they tied in a lot of our cultural practices into what it means to build this relationship with nature. This next part's a little bit explicit, but during the first part of that Western hunting mentorship in Washington, they gave us the opportunity to harvest a goat that they purchased from a local farmer. Not only should we be able to understand, like, what is it actually like to process a full animal from start to finish, but also should we be able to understand, like, culturally how we mourn for that animal and how we process that taking of life. And that component in and of itself isn't something that I think I would have gotten from any other, you know, hunting education platform. And I'm so grateful that they offered that to people who are coming from all sorts of different backgrounds. Some people, you know, burned copal, burned sage, prayed over it. A lot of us, if not all of us, cried, including the mentors and the mentees. And I think it's little things like that that allow for like cultural exploration and expansion. That is one of the reasons I'm so committed to the mission of Hunters of Color, because it's not about putting a shotgun in someone's hand. It's about connecting to the community. It's about reconnecting to a lot of your ancestral pathways that were lost to you or were taken from you. And I think having that much of an interpersonal relationship with the outdoors that isn't purely extractive is what really keeps me grounded to why I'm doing this work and why this kind of culturally relevant mentorship is important to communities of color.
It sounds like you felt really seen and heard by this group. Why is that important to pass on and make sure that everyone has that experience?
I think that there's a lot of adult onset outdoors people and a lot of adult onset hunters that are emerging right now. I can't give a statistic, but I'm one of those people. And I think knowing how important those relationships and those connections were to me, I'd like to make it easier for somebody to be able to delve into that. I always tell my friends back home that in a perfect world, I would return to Chicago and disseminate most of the skills that I've learned back to my community. You know, these are people who I've known my whole life, who I have relationships with, who I know haven't been afforded the same opportunities as people who are wanting to develop outdoor skills. And there's something so comforting and so empowering about being able to leave an urban area, being able to leave people, being able to leave the hustle and bustle, to just take a moment to reconnect with nature, to be able to put food on your plate that you procured. And I think even more importantly, being able to feed your community and be like, this is what I want for you. And I think that's why I do what I do, because it's not entirely that I want to continue to progress as an outdoors person. It's that I'm really excited to pass these skills on to other people, just because I found so much joy in developing this relationship with the outdoors and with nature.
So then, Bianca, what do you want to say to people out there who are maybe on the fence or who haven't had this kind of experience, you know, coming from somebody who didn't have this growing up and coming to the outdoors and coming to hunting as an adult? What would you say to them to kind of spur them into this direction?
I would say two things, and it's the same two things that I reiterate to everyone. When you decide to become an outdoors person, you have to develop a certain skill set. But you also get to develop a certain skill set. And that's very tailored to what your personal journey is. I know this is a podcast. People probably don't know what I look like. I am 5'9", 250 pounds. I'm not summiting any 14ers. I don't care if there's 80 bajillion elk on the other side of it. It's just not something I want to do. So all of my outdoor experiences are tailored to what I feel comfortable doing, which is a different level than somebody who summits 14ers regularly every summer might look like. You know, I'm on my own personal journey. Somebody else is going to be on their own personal journey. And there's no testament to like what you have to endure to be an outdoors person, because at the end of the day, when you engage with nature, you're supposed to enjoy it. And some people really like the challenge of getting over 14,000 feet of elevation, hiking in 40 miles. Some people really like a slow, flat, zero elevation change through nature. And whether you're fishing, whether you're hunting, whether you're mountain biking, trail running, you get to tailor that to you. So know that when you decide to take that step and say, like, I want to get these skills, you can 100% decide what you want to do, how you want to do it, and how far you want to take it. And you're also allowed to walk that back at any point and realize that you did more than you intended to, and you need to take a step back. And I think tying into that, the second most important thing about deciding, like, is this something I want to do, is knowing that everybody who decides to develop a new skill, try out something they haven't done before, there's a certain level of vulnerability that everyone is going to have. And I don't care if you've been recreating for 3 months or 30 years, everyone experiences that level of vulnerability at multiple points throughout their journey. And I think the most important thing about that is finding a group, finding a space, finding people that you feel comfortable with sharing that vulnerability, because having those people around you are going to help you get past that vulnerability. I always say that, you know, there is not a single amount of growth that you can go through without having some level of uncomfortability. But getting past that uncomfortability and realizing, like, hey, I did that, and these people helped me through that and helped build me up as a person and carried me through, that's what's really important about having that community in the outdoors, is having people who are going to support you and keep you going. And, you know, maybe sometimes they're going to hold you accountable. Maybe sometimes they're going to be there when you can't hold yourself up. But I think I would not have come as far as an outdoors person if I didn't recognize that vulnerability is, one, super important to growth, and two, it's something that everyone experiences. Because whether you decide to be an outdoorsman now and stick to it for 3 years, or you decide not to do it, that same amount of time is going to have passed. So you might as well commit yourself to something you're interested in and see where you are in 3 years, you know?
Bianca, that's fantastic. Just how can people either connect with you or find out more about Hunters of Color if they're interested?
So if you would like to find out more about me, shoot me an email. You can find my contact information both on Garna's website or on Hunters of Color. Hunters of Color also has two websites. We have one website that really gives a full in-depth detail about who they are, how they started, what their goals are. But a really new thing that we're piloting out is we have a community platform that's meant to work sort of like social media, where you can sign up, you can talk about, you know, what interests you have, what skills you have. Do you want to sort of approach a mentee role? Do you want to be a mentor? Do you want to be a funder? And people can see that, engage with you. And then you can also join the local community for yourself or for the ones around you. I'm obviously in the Colorado community, but we have excellent connections with the New Mexico community. And I love the people out in Texas, and they've been trying to get me out there for a long time. So I'm a member of multiple communities, not only so I can see how they're developing their program, but just so I can keep in touch with people that I really like, you know, being around and learning from and growing from. And then that's the one thing that I will say is very, very positive about our like new Hunters of Color community is that you can engage with anybody, you know, like I'm only an ambassador in Colorado, but I talk to people in Minnesota and Texas and Oregon and Washington. And it's just great to have a network with so many diverse skills and backgrounds that I can ask, you know, I can ask our board president, Crystal. She was like, hey, let's go on an elk hunt this year, maybe. And I'm constantly asking her questions. Our previous board president is now or lives in Washington, and I reach out to him all the time. And it's just amazing to have a network of people who not only you know you can rely on, but who genuinely care about the progress that you're making in your journey.
Thank you so much for taking some time out of your crazy busy schedule just to join us here at the Partners Conference. I think it just kind of speaks to the power of it that a couple of years ago you were inspired and met a few folks here. And now fast forward a couple of years, we can be sitting here having this great conversation with you. Just really appreciate the time and everything you're doing. And good luck finishing up that graduate program.
I'm almost done. I just got a year left. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Bianca. Just want to say thank you one more time to all of our guests and Shalana Gray for putting on such a great Partners Conference. It's great to be back after 2 years away and looking forward to a bigger and even better conference with all of our great partners again in 2025. The way we want to end the show today is a little bit different. We have Franklin Cruz, who attended our Partners Conference and gave a closing poem to everybody who was here. And we just want to end the show and leave everybody with that. So without further ado, here's the words from Franklin Cruz.
Let us listen to the elders, Arapaho, Cheyenne, Lakota, Kiowa, Pawnee, Ute, and the other 42 tribes that live in Colorado, who remind us the planet is as much a relative as a resource. If you are in this room, recognize this. Heal Colorado to win. Win to heal Colorado. Operating as an ecology over an economy. Find out why Abuelito embellishes about his ranchos, where he found tia frijol y calabaza. Biodiversification means humanization. Don't you know? Being in rooms with folks only like you is a metric of monocultures. Where are the songs for the seasons? I cannot hear drums anymore. I dream of deafening songs from cranes, sanctioned marches of tarantulas, wandering wolves and stable farming. We can't keep favoring two-leggeds. Haven't you been on TikTok? Kids got podcasts wandering swamps and plant foraging. Pronoun intros, Southern, East Coast, and an unimitatable Albuquerque accent. America panned the camera, showing folks of all kinds benefit outside. Generations of hunters, canoers, and birders. Any good field ecologist observes, these youngins are acting different. They've been listening despite our bias, purifying water, legislating, and direct actioning a spunk just like my Mexican grandparents. The elders remind us, Metakoye Oyasin, all my relations, the siblings that flow, layer, and precipitate, climbers, guides, and conservationists, educators with headwater knowledge, a biodiverse ecosystem of mind, bodies, and souls, stewarding generations of two-legged and four, brother Pike, sister Corn, cousin Pika, First Nation practices, because we're going back to them anyway, apparently. There's a lot of spiritual fine-tuning left. Get into that mechanic heart shop you got. When you can't recognize the tools anymore, remember, Homo habilis hacked tools up too. Mycological hominids, epigenetic spiritual advice. Keep the young ones close to Tonantzin, mother of all sand dunes, Rockies, and prairies. Conserve the love soil cantos. Any native person knows mother's worth everything. Why else do we run backpacking trips? Prefer herds and green pastures over factories. Fish where the surfactants don't touch. Camp beyond sound and light pollution. Litigate for legends our grandparents dreamed about. Ascending the prayers for acequias. Facing doubts of democracy and profit. Heal generations of broken promises. Listening to pebble, plant, pond, people stories. Nature doesn't show everything to everyone. Scar stories because it's wise to learn. Discerning the times we cut in, exploit, or extract. Our consumptions, bills, and responsibilities are man-made and ours. Give native and frontline people your money, risking reputations and cold shoulders for justice, redirecting boards, trust, and friends, freeing waters who miss their families in the South. A parade of ribbon skirts and drums returned to the forest. Remember, it's for the sake of us all. Colorado the Beautiful is our initiative. Listen to the elders. Nature is home. Colorado means colorful. I wonder what name it had before. I wonder if we heal, if we can remember. I wonder how many names it has had. The elders remind us, we're an ecosystem. I bet you they have the names. I wonder if we'll heal enough just to remember what the elder said.
You've been listening to Colorado Outdoors, the podcast for Colorado Parks and Wildlife. Remember to subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss an episode as we continue to explore the inspiring landscapes, wildlife, and outdoor experiences Colorado has to offer.